Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 119. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in for my co-host, David Todd, who remains on hiatus right now throughout the offseason, is Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Championship Monday. Boy, you've lived a lifetime where all you've known is the Penguins have been have been great. How is that?
I am a spoiled Pittsburgh fan, Dave, no doubt about it.
And for those that you have to be hiding underneath a rock right now, I think if you're a Pittsburgh sports fan, the Penguins captured their fifth Stanley Cup, or as I like to say, fifth Stanley Cup Sunday night. They're in Nashville by beating the Nashville Predators 2-0 in a game that I thought overall, you know, was I don't know, I kind of thought it was kind of sloppy altogether. You know, even the goaltending I thought was kind of shaky at times, Alex. But needless to say, the Steelers got a late kind of fluky goal from Patrick Hornquist late in that game, and then Matt Murray, you know, slammed the door the rest of the way, and the Penguins won it all. It never gets old watching Mario Lemieux raise the cup, you know, afterwards and all, and it was always fun to stay up late and watch, you know, the locker room celebrations and everything that goes along with that. So, you know what's going to happen now, Alex, now that and let me just say that coaching, now I obviously don't get to watch every Penguins game, but you know, I watch quite a few of them throughout the season, and you know, hockey's my second favorite, you know, professional sport, so I keep up with what the Penguins do, and let me just say I thought the coaching job Mike Sullivan did this year, with all those injuries that team had, and I realize all the NHL teams go through that and all, but it just seemed like a running laundry list of injuries and people out, you know, and get one back and lose two more. I just thought what a fantastic job it was by Mike Sullivan.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, to win a Stanley Cup without your best defenseman for the entire playoffs, I don't know if that's been done before, so very cool. The only blemish on my weekend, Dave, only one bad thing happened this weekend. The Little Caesars closest to my house shut down, so I don't know where I'm going to get my $5 pizza anymore. I was there on Thursday, no sign of shutdown, got a pizza, it was adequate, and then on Saturday, it was closed, so I think Art Modell is running the Little Caesars, and under the cover of night, they are moving or something. It was very strange.
That's weird. Now, you know what's going to happen now. Mike Sullivan, you know, comes to Pittsburgh and has two championships in his first two seasons. Now, people are going to start putting the clamps on Mike Tomlin now, right? keeping score. Mike Sullivan has two. Mike Tomlin has just the one right now. Mm-hmm. So hopefully Mike Tomlin can equal him, this coming season here. But yeah, once again, congratulations to the Penguins. And of course, if you're a diehard Penguins fan and able to keep up with all that, props to you as well. Alex, here we are, the middle of June. The Penguins are about to – the Penguins, here we go. The Steelers are about – got Penguins on the brain, don't I? The Steelers are about to start their mandatory minicamp on Tuesday. And, look, you know, it's a three-day event here. It's really more of an extension of the OTA practices and all like that. In fact, how will we even know how to differentiate the two? I mean, they still can't, you know, hit and anything along those lines, but they call it whatever they want to call it. But regardless, it is more mandatory. It'll be interesting to see if Le'Veon Bell shows up. I think there's an article or two up on like NFL.com. Not expecting that to happen. I wouldn't read, you know, too much into it. I'm not sure if the players have to take physicals again before all this goes down. So perhaps Le'Veon Bell will come in, take a physical, and then, skedaddle. But not a big deal when it comes to him. I think, you know, also not a big deal. It will be interesting to see if Alejandro Villanueva shows up. You know, we talked about that quite a bit last week. But other than that, I would expect a full complement of players. And as I wrote Sunday on the site as well, too, it looks like the Steelers will open up their mandatory minicamp with two of their eight draft picks not under contract. That's not a big deal. I mean, it's not probably overly surprising when you look at, you know, guarantees and offset language and stuff that goes along with that. I think I wrote that, you know, there was still who was the David Njoku still is not under contract with the Browns, and he was drafted, what was it, right before or right after Watt? He was drafted right before Watt was drafted. So he's still not under contract. I believe the players drafted before, right before, right after Cameron Sutton are still unsigned. So, you know, until he probably gets boxed in on one side, you know, that might take a little while. But regardless, you know, none of that's expected to last much longer. And there's no reason to believe that either Watt or Cameron Sutton with this rookie wage scale and all, you know, won't be under, you know, contract by the time, or they should be under contract well in time for training camp to get underway. So what are your initial thoughts here going into mandatory mini camp, you know, overarching kind of views?
Yeah, it's not a ton different. Obviously, like you said, it's basically just OTAs, you know, for a Steelers fan's perspective. The language doesn't really matter. The one good thing the NFL really got right in this past CBA was tamping down the rookie contracts and making them a lot easier to get done, so you don't have these, crazy holdouts. So unless you're Joey Bosa and the Chargers, you know, most teams get these guys under contract right away. My really other thought I have, Dave, is while I agree that, you know, Bell not being there is not a huge deal, and certainly it shouldn't be, you know, mountains out of molehills, but I would like him to be there, you know, just to be that presence as this team tries to come together and begin this road and start, you know, creating those building blocks to win a Lombardi. And you look at a guy like James Conner, you wish a guy like Bell was there so someone like Conner can pick his brain and start learning from him. That's a big part of these sessions right now, is where young guys watch what the veterans do and start creating their habits. And I'm a little disappointed that Bell was not there. I get it. I understand the injury and the contract and yada yada. But I do wish Bell was there, and I hope he shows up for at least rookie minicamp, or for a minicamp.
Yeah, and we'll see. And, you know, Ben Roethlisberger talked about it when the team reported for OTAs, and I think since then a few of the offensive linemen had chimed in on it and all. I wonder if those offensive linemen be saying the same thing if it was them, you know, in the same situation. You know, here's the thing with him. You know, because of the offseason, you know, groin surgery and all, you know, it's not like he has to worry about getting out on the field and hurting himself. So does it really hurt for you to show up and sit there and clap and offer encouragement and maybe a little coaching to some of the younger players there? I don't think that hurts for him to do that. Now, obviously, he's probably trying to make a statement, but this thing with him is as cut and dry as it can be. You know, there's a deadline of July 15th, so it's not like this thing's going to last well into the summer, into training camp with him. Because, you know, the franchise tag is slightly over $12 million. I mean, when you look, who was it yesterday that just got a deal, the Chargers?
Melvin Ingram.
Right. You know, he had the tag, and now he's got a deal. And, oh, yeah, if you look back at all the players that got tags this year and look at their new money average of their deals, it's slightly more than what the tag amount was. And that's what I've been kind of saying with Bell all along, even though I think the deal that the Steelers ultimately get done with Bell will be more, you know, will be a little bit closer to the actual tag value itself. I mean, there's absolutely no reason to think, you know, and, you know, we'll keep our fingers crossed, obviously, that, you know, come Bell's new deal will come in, you know, with a money average of around $10 million or so. But look, I mean, this thing is Bell's a new deal for Bell is really framed up as probably as much as it can be. Now, there's obviously some areas of negotiation you know, moving forward, because if not, a deal would be done by now. But it's not like, in my opinion, him saying, I'm going to show the Steelers here that I mean business by sitting out mandatory minicamp. Because here's the thing. Either he's going to get a deal or he's not. And if he doesn't, he's going to play underneath the tag in 2017. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'd like to see him there. Same with Villanueva. But, you know, we'll see. And I think one beat writer wrote late last week that he expects Villanueva to sit it out.
Yeah, I wrote about that. That caught me by surprise a little bit. I believe it was Chris Bradford, and you know, I respect Bradford. He does good work, but I said it before. I just can't see it. It wouldn't make any sense. I mean, he showed up for OTAs, for 8 practices, signed the injury waiver, so he took the risk. You know, assumed all the risk. You know, why would you do that and then just sit out for the mandatory part? You know, so we'll see what happens though. Maybe I'm wrong.
Let's see. Anything else? I ran down, you know, I ran down that, you know, we talked about it on the podcast on Friday, and I wrote up a big, big list of guys that are kind of, you know, banged up or coming off of surgeries from last year. I think that list was, what, 10, 12, something like that, players. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody else that I left off that list, you know, I know there was some talk about maybe Marcus Gilbert missing some time here and there, but in the grand scheme of thing, I couldn't find anything concrete there. But, you know, as a whole, and, you know, we hope that continues through the next 3 days of mandatory minicamp, this team is healthy. You know, all things considered, people are going to say, don't jinx it, Dave. But, you know, look, in the grand scheme of things, we have no bearing on what happens, you know, on the field there. But, I mean, you have to like the health of this team entering the mandatory minicamp. And I think it's obvious that several of these guys either aren't going to take in it because of, you know, previous surgeries, or the guys that, you know, are healthy enough to do something probably aren't going to be in full capacity.
Yeah, no, I think that was the whole list, and we ran down the list, I think, last podcast pretty good, Dave. But yeah, the team, I think, you know, they have a lot of minor injuries, that's the key word, minor, and, you know, the team just being cautious right now with it being June and not any need to push it. So they're in pretty good health right now, but like you said, knock on wood, because I hope that remains. So the AFC North had some injuries, you know, the Ravens have been hit hard, so hopefully Pittsburgh stays clean.
All right, we are now in the middle of June, and list and ranking season is in full swing. Full bloom. And that kind of stuff is the stuff that, you know, look, I mean, the next 6 weeks after the Steelers break this mandatory minicamp, it's brutal. You know, bloggers, you know, such as Alex and myself and Matthew, we'll have, you know, we'll try to be creative as possible, go back and look at stats and some tape of more of these draft picks and all like that. But on the flip side, we'll mix in some of these lists and rankings as we do every year. And ESPN had one up the other day, Alex, and they don't, not that I didn't see them attach a single name to it as far as them ranking backup quarterbacks around the league. And I guess that, you know, I don't know, I guess anybody, they could have got an intern to throw this together for them and just slap it up. And maybe that's what actually happened. But regardless, they have 3 tiers of a total. I think it's 16 backup quarterbacks around the league. And they put them in tiers, and then they ranked them in these tiers on top of that. And, you know, the tier one, I don't think it's any huge surprise. You know, with Jimmy Garoppolo, Matt Moore, AJ McCarron. Tier two, there definitely can be some arguments there, but they put Landry Jones in tier three, and they actually ranked Landry 14th overall on the list of 16 quarterbacks, and only Geno Smith and Ryan Mallett listed lower than Landry Jones. Now, you and I obviously aren't huge Landry Jones fans. We don't have posters up. At least I don't, hanging up in my office here. I don't think you do either. We both were kind of still, you know, with that said, we both were kind of hoping that the Steelers wouldn't spend a mid-round draft pick on a quarterback this year. When you look at this list, Alex, you know, is Landry Jones too low? And if you would, tell me the quarterbacks that, assuming you could get them you know, assuming we're talking apples, apples and oranges, oranges and catfish and catfish here, you know, name me the quarterbacks that you'd rather have that are on this list other than Landry Jones.
The ones I would rather have.
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Because I'm sure the list, I mean, I would hope the list that, that you wouldn't want would be longer.
Right, right. Well, first of all, just a small poster of Landry Jones I have in the corner of my room, to clarify that. The ones I would take, and I'll read off just the tier that they have up on the CSPN graphic. Garoppolo, Matt Moore, A.J. McCarron, I'll take him over Landry. Chase Daniel, Colt McCoy, I would probably take Nick Foles. I would take Cody Kessler. I don't know Matt Barkley. I'm 50-50 on him. And honestly, Dave, that might be it. I would take Landry over Osweiler, Castle, Anderson, Stanton, Henny, Smith, and Mallett.
Okay, so you would actually take a few, you'd take Colt McCoy over Landry?
I would, because I don't want to think of Colt McCoy as Cleveland, you know, Colt McCoy. He's done a lot better in Washington.
And Chase Daniel, even at you know, has one career touchdown. I know that. I know that's not
the sample size is so small. It is tough, but I think I would take Daniel since the ceiling's a little higher.
Okay, okay. Interesting. Now you said you would not take Osweiler.
Correct. I wouldn't take Osweiler, Castle, and so I basically have, what do I have? Landry Jones, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'd have him as the 8th, I guess, best backup quarterback.
Okay, I think that's fair, and that's kind of the point that I was trying to make.
Do the same list. Where do you have?
I would take Garoppolo, obviously. Matt Moore, I would take. A.J. McCarron, I would take, even though very small sample size on him. You know what? I'm surprised, and you know, I understand. You know, it's all what you can get for a guy and all like that. I was a bit surprised that the Bengals, you know. We don't know what they got or whatnot, you know, as far as an offer maybe on. I'm surprised they didn't deal him, and especially if they could have got a first-round pick or something for him. Now, I was trying to explain this to my wife the other day, talking about Garoppolo and you know, what he's gone through in New England and how he's entering the final year and how the Patriots are going to have even a bigger decision last year. You know, she said, well, they can just trade him for a first round draft pick. I said, well, yeah, but you know, here's the thing, even getting a first round draft pick, you know, for a guy like Garoppolo, have you still managed to get value for him? Because I mean, let's face it, franchise quarterbacks don't grow on trees. You know, and ones, you know, not only franchise quarterbacks, but ones that could probably deliver you a Super Bowl. And I think I put Jimmy right now. You know, maybe it's because of the system he's in, even though, you know, we haven't seen a lot of him. But I've liked what I've seen out of Jimmy. I was trying to explain to my wife that, you know, just because you get a first round draft pick doesn't mean you've gotten full value for him.
Right.
But
definitely over Landry.
Right, right. But definitely over Landry. Now, man, I just – maybe I think about – when I think about Colt McCoy and his time in Cleveland, maybe I think about that too much. I'm not so sure I'd take Colt McCoy over Landry. Now, Nick Foles, I've always kind of been a little intrigued by Nick Foles. And he's the kind of guy that I wonder, man, how would he be in Pittsburgh? You know, in an offense that would allow him to kind of, you know, play a little bit Roethlisberger-like, if that makes sense. You know, I've always kind of liked Foles, so I think I would definitely be up for that. Kessler,
You don't. I like Cody Kessler. I got a soft spot.
Yeah, now obviously I haven't seen a lot of him. Brock Osweiler, no thanks. I mean, if you want, you know. To me, Osweiler's Landry Jones light, right?
For the bigger contract.
Yeah, with the
a lot bigger.
Much bigger contract there. Man, Matt Castle and Anderson are like just giant Band-Aids, you know, right? They come in and they just maybe not lose the game for you, if that makes sense. Barkley, you know, you obviously a little bit bigger fan of Barkley than I am. Stanton, to me, he's another, you know, is he really an upgrade over Landry Jones? I don't think so. You know, Henny, I've liked some things Henny has done during his time. I think Henny can come in off the bench and maybe win you a game, but maybe just one. So, you know, I might be a little intrigued there, but Geno Smith and Ryan Mount, look, I understand what Ryan Mount did, against the Steelers, a couple years ago, whatnot, but, no thank you, and definitely no thank you with Jimmy Smith. So I guess all in all, I have Landry Jones right there about with you right there in the middle of the pack. So I do think, look, I understand a lot of people listen to this podcast, not huge Landry Jones fans, but still, I mean, is he, of the 16 quarterbacks there, he's not 14th overall.
Yeah, I thought that was a little on the low side. But
Here's the thing, and stats obviously aren't everything. But, I pulled all the stats on all 16 of these quarterbacks. Average yards per attempt, what did I write? Landry's right up there. Yards per attempt, 7.6. Landry leads the list.
Wow.
In yards per attempt. When you look at yards per completion, Landry leads that list with 12.6. I think I knew the yards per attempt was up there over 7, which is a healthy number. But I don't think I knew that, and sure, it's probably a byproduct. Yards per completion is one that a stat that we don't talk about or isn't talked about, overall. But 12.6 also leads the 16 quarterbacks listed here. And you look at his completion rate of 60.3. I mean, anytime you're talking about a quarterback with at least a 60% or better completion percentage, you got to be moderately happy. Now, obviously, the TD, the touchdown to interception ratio, is not good. Seven TDs, six interceptions, and then of course that interception number is going to affect the overall quarterback rating as well. But I guess. And my whole focus of tearing that list up was to say that Landry Jones belongs higher, and I do. I think he belongs maybe sixth or seventh.
Yeah, no, kudos to you to putting all those numbers together. That's a really great look at it. And I know it's quarterback rating. It doesn't mean a ton, but he's got the seventh best quarterback rating, I believe, or the fifth best quarterback rating, I believe. He's one of seven backup quarterbacks on this list to have a career completion percentage above 60%, and he might be the only quarterback on this list to throw an interception on a fake field goal attempt 2 years ago.
That's true. That's true.
I look at seven touchdowns, five picks is kind of how I look at it.
That's a good point. That is a good point. It's one of the things that we forget about when we look at some of these numbers is the context of when they actually happened. Now, did he have any business trying to throw? Who was that to? That was the Villanueva.
Yeah. He's probably the only quarterback on this list to throw a fake field goal to an offensive tackle.
Oh, Lord. You just don't draw that up, Danny Smith. I'm sorry. No way Landry should have executed that one out there. But, okay. Did we miss anything on Landry Jones? I know there's a lot of people that are excited. Joshua Dobbs is in town now. But, there's absolutely no way Dobbs is going to bypass Landry Jones by the start of the regular season. And, geez, Landry would really have to stink during practices and whatnot for Dobbs to bypass him on the depth chart at all during his rookie season.
Yeah, it's really hard to envision a scenario where that happens because, Jones now has a body of work. It's not just his practice reps versus Dobbs' practice reps. It's what Jones has done over his career, preparing for games, being put into games, starting games. So even if he were to struggle hypothetically, he's got enough of clout in that body of work that Dobbs simply does not have that it'd be shocking to me if Dobbs leapfrogs him.
All right, Willie Colon, I think, was on. And look, I like Willie. Willie Colon, some of these former Steelers offensive linemen are absolutely great, I think, or are going to be fairly or very listenable on the radio post their careers. Now, Cologne's obviously now, you know, I think he's out of the league now, and he's been doing some radio work for a little while. I like him. I think Ramon Foster is absolutely going to be fantastic at it. Mm-hmm. Who else? Kind of got a gift for Gab. I'm drawing a blank here, but Cologne was on with what was it, Mike Florio on Pro Football Talk Live, and look, I understand being a little bit of a homer maybe for Pittsburgh, but he had an interesting comment about one tight end, Jesse James, did he not?
Yeah, all right, let me pull it up because I need to get the exact quote, and credit to Matthew Marksy for finding it. Now, Cologne's overall thought, which I agree with, was he said the Steelers are arrows up, they're improving, and, you know, he praised the team, but he said, where's the quote at? He says, Antonio Brown will be the key factor, and I think Jesse James, who doesn't get enough credit, is probably one of the top five tight ends in the league, so I'm excited for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Willie Cologne, my man, let's have an intervention. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, and I think, look, top five, there's absolutely no way top five. I mean, you're talking about a guy that now if you want to talk about top five number two tight ends, maybe we'll go there. Look, and we broke down Jesse a little bit a couple weeks ago, so we'll go ahead and hit back on that. You just recently, I think, had a post and a video dedicated to him. Some, this is a guy whose blocking improved, I thought, very noticeably last year. Mm-hmm. And the thing, however, is he's not anything like Ladarius Green, you know, was, you know, last season in the six games that he played in, with his ability to stretch the field. I like the things that Jesse's able to do, though, out in the pass patterns. We talked either last show or the show before, when teams get in these defenses getting these cover twos against the Steelers, and how, you know, how the underneath work starts to take over there. We start to see these meshes, and then the tight ends rubbing off some of these man coverages with these legal picks and all. And I thought, I think Jesse's absolutely great at that, getting proper depth in his routes, and knowing, you know, where the guy coming across that he has to rub off is, those little things that no stats are attached to it, kind of things with him. I think he's getting better, but I mean, you know, and look, how many catches did we say he had last year? I'm trying to remember. Was it 50 something with him?
I think
when you actually look at that number, you say, man, I didn't realize Jesse caught that many passes last year. I'm pulling it up right now. Oh no, I'm sorry. 39 catches for 338 yards, and that's roughly right at it's actually a lot less than 10 yards per reception. 8.7 last year, and then of course in his 8 catches during his rookie season, he averaged 7. Those, you know, take a good look at that 8.4 average yards per reception for Jesse James, because that's probably going to be what it's going to be for his career. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to stretch the field. Now, would I like to see him be used a little bit more, possibly because of his size in red zone situations? Absolutely. And in fact, you know, Ben probably still kicking himself for not hitting him on that one in that game. What was it last year against the Bills? That who was that linebacker that picked him off and ended up was a free agent this past year?
Zach Brown.
Right, Zach Brown picked him off. Right, in a pass that Ben just didn't put enough air in it. But you'd like to see Jesse be able to provide him maybe a little bit more in the red zone area. And as we said, as long as he continues to pick up his blocking, and as I wrote after the 2016 season ended, the Steelers tight end group as a whole was absolutely miserable on third down targets. So that's something that you know, you need more of. Am I missing anything here? I mean, people say that we're too negative on Jesse James, but what? There's not enough positives for us to pull together here to make an argument that he's top five in the league.
Right. There's two separate thoughts here. One can be he's an emerging player, he's growing, and you like him, and you're encouraged by his progress. And you can also say he's not a top five tight end in the league, and he's just not enough of a threat in the passing game. He's not that vertical threat, and the sub-10 average kind of shows that. So, you know, he's not that seam threat. He makes tough catches in traffic. You give him credit for that. That's very important as a tight end and very important in Pittsburgh. But, you know, he's just not a top five tight end. He's a top 15 maybe tight end right now, and he could grow, he could get better, and I expect him to, and what he does for Pittsburgh is very valuable that maybe not a lot of other teams would properly value. But Cologne is just way out of left field on this one.
True or false, Jesse James' blocking ability is the equivalent to the best it ever was in Matt Spaeth's career?
False. Spaeth, still at his prime, was better because he had a better frame to him, more muscle to him.
I agree. That's one thing when you look back at Matt Spaeth's career is, man, there was a span of what, 2 or 3 years there that he was a great blocker, and that ended up getting him paid with Chicago, I think. Now, it goes without saying that Jesse James is the better receiving option than Matt Spaeth was.
Yes, very, very much so.
So, you know, if Jesse can, you know, what are you looking for? You know, you think Jesse can top that 39 reception number in 2017?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I fully expect him to now that the starting reins are fully turned over to him with Ladarius Green's release. So, yeah, he should touch 50, 55 catches this year.
Absolutely. I'd like to see that, maybe that average yards per catch, gets close to 9, 9 yards. I'd like to see those touchdowns go from 3 to, 5 or 6 is reasonable, right? I mean, Heath Miller was 5, 6, 7, 8, a year kind of guy there. People seem to, people still forget that when we're talking about Jesse James, we're talking about a player that he's only 23 still, So this kid, I mean, he was just a baby coming out of Penn State, and now he's got two seasons underneath his belt. He should know absolutely everything what's going on. He should be even stronger this offseason. So, yeah, I think 50 catches for 470 yards. That sound about right. 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, no, I think that's a pretty good gauge to put it on. And yeah, he's 23. He's younger than me, so now I feel old for the first time ever.
There you go.
Real quick, just give credit to James Daniel, the tight ends coach. I'm very happy Steelers.com has done some of these coaches' interviews with guys we don't hear from too often. John Mitchell the other day, James Daniel, the most recent one. Daniel was the only coach Heath Miller ever had in his NFL career, and he molded up Heath Miller, and he's doing similar in terms of developing a tight end in Jesse James. So James Daniel's been around since 2004. He's been coaching tight ends forever. He helped develop Algie Crumpler out in Atlanta beforehand. He's done a great job in Pittsburgh. Just give him some credit because he never even gets talked about. Mitchell gets talked about occasionally. Daniel never, and he deserves it.
Yeah, and we'll be interested to see some of these undrafted guys. We talked about the other or have been talking about for quite a while, and Fazon Odom and Scott Orndorff, the kid out of Pitt there as well. Be interested to see one. And look, Xavier Grimble, this is a guy. What can Xavier Grimble become?
A number two, I guess, a situational guy that can stretch the seam. I don't know if I see starter with him, but he looks to be in great shape, and he's definitely the best athlete at tight end on this roster right now. I think he's probably better than Odom even is. He can be a situational vertical threat.
Is there any chance that Grimble doesn't make this 53 now that Green's gone?
I suppose. I do want to make sure Grimble's in good shape conditioning-wise. I assume it got a lot better playing in the NFL last year, but I go back to where he was at camp, and, the first couple of days he really struggled, so you do want to make sure he's in football shape. But I think obviously he's in the inside circle and he'd have to work his way out to fall out.
We'd like to see him do more of the things like he did on that touchdown against the Ravens, right? Was it?
The Bengals.
Or the Bengals
in week 2.
Yep. Okay, the Bengals. Didn't he have one that he took a big pop from I thought he took a big pop from
Might be right.
From the Ravens safety in one.
So Weddle? Is it Weddle? Was
yeah,
the Weddle
didn't he take one? Didn't he take a pop from Weddle in one of those games over the middle? I'm trying to remember.
I think you're right, but I'm getting old because I'm older than Jesse James, so the memory's going, Dave.
Okay, but regardless, you'd like to see him be able to do more things down the seam, some more Ladarius Green type of things, mm-hmm. you know, because I mean, I think he is a guy that can give you some explosive plays, and like it or not, you know, I thought Green. Was that ankle one? When Green was healthy and on the field, did he ever look as fluid and fast as maybe you hoped he'd be?
He definitely looked a little slower and a little more lumbering than what he did in San Diego, but I kind of chalked it up to him trying to get his, you know, football, get back in football shape, and he never really had the chance to do so.
All right, I just pulled it up here. Grimble had 2 touchdowns last year, and I'm trying to recall the one for me against the Bengals.
The Bengals was week 2. He ran that little bang 8, that skinny post, and he dove out in the end zone for it from bang, like 20-yard touchdown.
Right. Okay, I remember that one now. Now, wasn't it a post also against the Ravens? Because he's that was on Christmas Christmas night. Do you remember that one?
I don't remember that one as clearly for whatever reason, even if it was more recent.
Yeah, I think that's the one where he took the pop from Weddle as well, too. Maybe I'm confused. I'm trying to get confused the two. I'll have to go back and watch that later on today. Yeah. But regardless, we're still kind of surprised. We wanted this team to take a tight end. And maybe they would have if the kid out of Toledo had been there, Michael Roberts. But didn't Daniel say this past week that he wasn't banging the table for a tight end?
You're right. He said he never lobbies for a tight end. He just lobbies to draft good players.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Maybe I think that was more the right thing to say than anything else. Now, I think Mike Munchak's supposed to be part of have a sit down maybe with Missy Matthews. That'll come out today. I really am looking forward to that. And something else that you wrote, I think, is up on the site today, talking about. You know the state of the Steelers' current offensive line and whether or not it's the best that we've seen.
Right, and the Munchak interview does appear to already be up on Steelers.com, so we'll definitely check that out later this afternoon. Yeah, I just wanted to throw the question out there because one's June 12th, and there's not a ton to write about, but it's an interesting question. I've kicked around in my head for a little while now, and I've kind of made mention of it, but I've never explored it. And, you know, I wrote in the article that perhaps I'm not the best guy to answer this question, considering I'm the young whippersnapper, but, you know, I think considering the Steelers have never had super great offensive linemen, they're not, you know, known and revered for having elite Hall of Famers, that this group of 5 right now, I think, could be as good as the Steelers have ever had. So I had other lines that would be competitive, the 2005 line with Marvell Smith and Faneca and them, and I went back to in the 70s with John Kolb and Mansfield and Moon Mullins. So, you know, Dave, you've been watching the Steelers for a long, long time. Where do you rank this starting 5?
Yeah, and I think you have to draw the line. You know, I think you have to draw a generational line somewhere in the sand as well, too, because, mm-hmm. you know, the way the game has changed and you know, more onus away from the run, you know, to pass protecting and that kind of thing. So I don't think it's fair to sit here and compare, you know, today's offensive line to, you know, the Super Bowl teams of the 70s with the Steelers. I just, you know. You're talking about. I mean, what was a heavy weight for an offensive lineman back in the 70s? You know, 270 mm-hmm. pounds.
Right. No, I understand that debate, but you know, just in terms of overall talent and dominance and success, I mean, I think you can kind of work it out.
Yeah, but even then, it's still hard because
it is.
I mean, yeah. You know, the kind of things, you know, they you know, you hear Tunch talk about they run that 14 straight and how they would run that power, you know, what was it, 34 or 36 and 36 toss and things like that, where you really, you know, had the linemen on the move quite a bit. And sure, the Steelers pull DeCastro and have started pulling their tackles and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's impossible, I think, for me to measure. So let me look at it from the aspect of Ben's career on.
Okay. Yeah.
Or even from the from 2000 on.
Right.
Let
me ask you this. I have the 2005 offensive line, a Super Bowl winning year. Marvell Smith, Alan Faneca, Jeff Hardings, Kendall Simmons, and Max Starks. Is that group of five better than this group of five?
I don't think it is. I really don't think it is. Now, how long was that one in 2005 able to even stay on the field together?
Well, I mean, for 2005, I think they mostly enjoyed good health. I'm not looking for, just for that season. Well, I guess it's hard for me to answer what I'm looking for in the question. But, yeah, I mean, Marvell Smith, if that back didn't go, I think it'd be much better conversation about this.
I mean, Hardings. I mean, was Hardings a better center than Pouncey?
No.
Okay. No. I think. For all that Alejandro has done right now, Marvell Smith probably still the better, you know, left tackle, right?
Yeah, I'd agree. One healthy.
Faneca, geez, I mean, we talk about Ramon Foster and how consistent he is, and you know, I'll tell you what, let's flip him here and let's compare, because you know, basically. Faneca is that line's version of David DeCastro. Fair enough.
That's a good point. Yep. Roll
okay. So, you know, Faneca better than DeCastro.
Still better.
Yeah, still better. I mean, David DeCastro still has a lot of career left and everything, but I think Faneca was still better. We already tackled center. I think Pouncey's better than Hardings. So now it comes to. Kendall Simmons and Ramon Foster, right? Who you taking there? I'm taking Foster there. I'm sorry.
I would do the same.
All right. So now it comes to this is a good way to do this. I'm glad you brought this up because I think this is the fairest way to do this. So then it comes down to Max Starks and Marcus Gilbert. And look, Starks, even though he eventually. You know, he started off on the right side, and of course, he flipped over to the left side. The last two seasons that Marcus Gilbert has put up, Alex, I mean, you can make arguments that he belonged in a Pro Bowl, right?
I could argue All Pro, which is more important.
All right, so I mean, I was a big Max Starks fan, but especially when he switched over from right to left. But you got to take Gilbert there, right?
It's interesting because I think. Gilbert and Starks both fit their teams very well. Starks on a run-minded team, Gilbert on a pass-minded team. And they're very polar opposites. You know, Starks was a mountain of a man at, 6'8", 340, probably a lot heavier than that. And Gilbert looks like a tight end sometimes with how svelte he is. But I think,
That's a word that I always struggle to say.
Yeah.
Patrick Horn, how do you say it? Hornquist.
Hornquist.
But look, I mean, think back and unfortunately, you know, we're getting into your childhood here. We're talking about Max Starks' early days, but you know, definitely midway of Max Starks' career on, he was not fleet of foot trying to set outside, to get to that edge. Right.
So I would take Gilbert because I think he's at an All-Pro level. I don't think Starks ever got there that year or beyond.
I would agree. And what a go back and look at you want to have some fun. Go back and look at the pictures from Gilbert, you know, first year or two with the Steelers, and look at him now.
He looked like Starks then, and now he doesn't.
Yeah, boy, who was it? Our buddy takes the photos.
Tim Rice.
Yeah, Tim Rice during training camp. Boy, he posted a couple last year during training camp where it just you look at Gilbert and think, my goodness, he looks good.
I tweeted out. I'll have to try to retweet it today. I have it right now. I'll retweet it right now as we're talking. Maybe you can look at it, Dave, when I retweet it. But the comparison of a Gilbert then to now, it's remarkable. I'll hit
All right, I look forward to that. But okay, so kind of reviewing here, what we have, and this is probably the better argument to have, right? Instead of talking about best Steelers offense of best Steelers. Boy, look at that! I just seen it now.
Yeah, well, that's Gilbert. I think it's rookie year. I believe it is.
Gilbert looks more like Foster. his right. Rookie. Oh Lord, have mercy! What a difference! I mean,
credit to him. He got himself in tremendous shape. He may be one of the most cut linemen in the league.
He really and wasn't it him recently posted on Instagram that he went to where was it? Somewhere Bahamas or something like that. Was on the mat doing yoga with all with all those beautiful women there. But geez, goodness gracious, that's great. Those are some great photos. I'm gonna have to retweet this right now. Okay, so is it a better argument to have then? Maybe is comparing that 2005 line to what we have now. So we agree that left tackle we're taking. We're taking Marvell Smith right now over Villanueva. We're still probably taking Fanica over David DeCastro.
Yep.
But the other three, we're taking Pouncey over Hardings, we're taking Foster over Simmons, and we're taking Gilbert over Max Starks.
Yeah, I think I would take this line over the 2005 version because I think they're more balanced. I think they can run block as well as they can pass protect, and I think the right tackle kind of seals it for me because I think Gilbert's a whole lot better in pass pro than Starks ever was, and that's kind of a deal breaker.
All right, how close is Villanueva to prime – prime Marvell Smith, and how close is David DeCastro to prime Alan Fanica?
They're still, to me, both a tier down, if that makes sense.
I would agree, but they are the next tier down. We're not talking two tiers.
Right, sure. One tier down.
Okay. So I mean that you know, I think you have to give it to the current offensive line in the way that we did. I'm glad that we kind of flipped the guards there, if you will, as well.
It's a good idea
because I think that's the best way to do it. Okay, we tore that topic up. What do we have to close with now? Anything?
We do have an exclusive interview on Steelers Depot with Faison Odom talking about how basically he never had to make any run calls at all at Fordham and how the NFL is kind of taking him by not by surprise but by adjusting to it. So we do have a good interview there. We encourage you to check out, and we'll definitely carve up that Munchak interview because I can't wait to hear what he has to say. Always great stuff there.
Yeah, I that'll give me something to work on today as well with trying to carve up that Munchak interview pretty good there, and. My Steelers 7 shots on Sunday there. Did you see the celebration of the it's a couple of years old now, going back to 2015, the game between the Jacksonville Sharks and the Tampa Bay Storm, where they kind of imitated a kind of wrestling move. Is that too much
For the NFL standards?
Yeah.
No, I wish there were no rules at all about penalties. I want, what did Daniel Tosh, the comedian, say? Have a tea party out there. I don't care. Go crazy. It's football.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure if we're going to see anything that elaborate, but I suppose we could. And, boy, Snoop Dogg apparently claims to be a Steelers fan, but he certainly does like that New England Patriots money, right? Because he showed up at their ring ceremony and, obviously performed and one would think that the Patriots paid him to do so as well. So I found that interesting. Also, Ray Fittipaldo from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette has a great story up on Brian Mahalik. And look, we've talked about Brian, a few. Is there a chance that let's assume? I mean, look, Gerald Hawkins, we think is going to make this team as a swing tackle, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if that happens? You got a guy like Chris Hubbard, who we talk about all the time. Yeah, he can play. Just because you can play all five positions doesn't mean you should. And that's where I'm at with Chris Hubbard. Is there a chance that Mahalik might be the better option to keep over Hubbard?
No, I don't. I think if Mihalovic makes it, he'll make it as that, well, to be ninth offensive lineman on his own merit. But he's not going to offer anything that, you know, Hawkins can't offer, and he's not going to give you the interior presence that Hubbard can. I mean, I know that Hubbard's not particularly good at any spot, but it's tough for any guy to learn two spots, you know, just to make any sort of flip, even if it's left guard to right guard, left tackle to right tackle. And so for a guy with the ability on paper, at least, and experience to play all five spots is really rare and pretty valuable.
You know what? All this talk now, we broke this down and kind of reset it a couple of weeks ago of what we expect. I'm really looking forward to watching this second team Steelers offensive line. And maybe that's a conversation we'll have around that time, is how does this second team offensive line rank, you know, and all like that. But when you draw it out on paper, we expect to see Hawkins from left to right. We expect to see, I think, Hawkins at left tackle. Ethan Cooper potentially at left guard, BJ Finney at center, I guess Chris Hubbard at right guard, and then Brian Mihalovic at right tackle, right? I mean, it's going to be fun to break that down.
Yeah, because the first line set, there's nothing to talk about this year. There's not even the left tackle battle with Ryan Harris and Villanueva. So first tackle, or first line, it's done. Second line on, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Okay, anything else that we failed to hit on that we need to get on before we get out of here?
I think that's everything. If anyone wants to send me a little Caesar's pizza, that'd be great, because I don't have one right now.
Yeah, those things will make you fat, man.
They will.
All right, Alex, good job as always. We managed to fill up almost an hour here during one, you know, a time where hardly anything's going on. So if you like what we do, please follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Cazora at Alex_Cazora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, you want to help donate to the cause, you can go to SteelersDepot.com and find that donate button upper right navigational bar. Let us know what you think about Landry Jones ranking on that list of 16 quarterbacks, backup quarterbacks that we went down, and also let us know what you think comparing that 2005 offensive line to the 2016-17 offensive line. If you think we're right there, you can send that to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We're probably going to need some help, some questions maybe to answer on the Friday show. So, you know, get on Twitter or email and send us some for the Friday show as well. We had some great ones this past Friday. It'd be great to have another five or six of them again. So with that said, thanks for listening. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.